This is mythical.
Ear Biscuits is supported by the farmer's dog.
Dogs will eat basically anything you put in front of them. And if you're Barbara, you will like seek it out off of tables, counters. That woman is crazy. That woman being my dog. So it's important to be putting the right kind of food in their bowls.
Right, and when you care about your dogs as much as we care about ours, you know, a thoughtful approach to what goes in those bowls makes sense.
Yes, the farmer's dog is real, fresh, healthy food with whole meat and veggies gently cooked in human-grade kitchens to preserve their nutritional value.
Just tell them about your dog and they'll deliver personalized vet-developed recipes for as little as $2 a day.
The meals arrive pre-portioned and in ready-to-serve packs delivered on your schedule. Millions of meals have been ordered across the country.
We've been partnering with the Farmer's Dog for a few years now and they really are as good as they say. It really has never been easier to invest in your dog's health with fresh food.
Get 50% off your first box of fresh, healthy food at thefarmersdog.com/ear.
Ramble.
Before we get started, we want to let you know that we got some tour dates. We want to invite you to take it up and come see us for a night of unpredictable comedy and harmonious music. How does that sound, Rhett?
That sounded really good. I might go to the show.
We're going to be singing and talking to each other and like, who knows what else is going to happen, but sometimes it involves weird get-ups.
Well, every show is different. We never know what's going to happen.
We're going to be in Las Vegas June 21st, Salt Lake City June 22nd, Denver, Colorado June 23rd, Milwaukee, Wisconsin June 25th, Indianapolis, Indiana June 26th, Detroit June 27th, Omaha, that's in Nebraska, June 29th, Minneapolis, Minnesota, June 30th.
And then later in the year, we're gonna be in Houston, Texas on September 4th, New Orleans, September 5th, Birmingham on September 6th, Jacksonville, Florida on September 7th, Tampa, Florida, September 8th, Albuquerque, New Mexico, November 20th, Phoenix, Arizona, November 21st, Sacramento, California, November 22nd, and Valley Center, California, on November 23rd. Again, these are all the dates for the rest of 2019 and most likely for quite some time.
So if you want to see us, now's the time to tick it up. RhettandLinkLive.com. Now on with the biscuit. Welcome to Ear Biscuits. I'm Link.
And I'm Rhett. This week at the Round Table of Dim Lighting, we are exploring the question, were the 20s the best years of our lives?
Now, we didn't live during the 1920s. It's like when
the
we were
in 20s?
When we were in our 20s, was that the best time of our lives?
Have we peaked? Did we peak long ago?
That's turns a different out. Question. Was it? I think best and peaked are two totally different questions. And,
oh, well, it sounds like you're already answering the question.
I have lots of thoughts on best. And what? I think it has lots of implications for how, well, I don't want to spoil it.
What about your best peaks?
Are we going to get back into which kind of peak you're talking about again? I do need to acknowledge that my voice is otherworldly. It's very, you know, is it very DJ-esque?
I feel like it's, yeah, so Link's still a little under the weather, but I actually, maybe I've adapted to your voice. Maybe this is the new you. I don't hear it anymore.
I know, it's like I'm still having this head cold thing. Is this me for, is this permanent, Link?
Well, you know what,
is this my permalink?
I've been in a constant state of feeling like I'm getting what you have. I mean, I've done things like I haven't been going
of
to work
course.
Out.
You're
I've,
in
I've
a constant
canceled
state
everything.
Of getting everything. That's called being a hypochondriac.
No, but I have physical symptoms. Yeah, I have
that
slight headache, slight sore throat,
from
very slight
hypochondriatism.
But you know, I think I'm gonna be okay.
Well, when we were riding in the car, I mean, if I encounter anybody, I'm like, don't touch me, don't touch me. It's for your own good. And then we're in the car and I'm like, don't touch me, but I'm touching stuff in your car. And then I noticed that I finished my coffee and I put the coffee down and then you adjusted the temperature gauge on your car, whatever it's called, your temperature dial. You wanted it to be cooler, my friend. And I couldn't help but notice, and I did point out that as you were touching the temperature dial, your finger was rubbing up against my coffee lid where my mouth goes.
Yeah, because you got this big ass thermos you take everywhere.
I'm like,
why does it have to be so big? Why
has it got to be my thermos's fault?
Well, it's your thermos is your so big on the, that it was blocking the temperature controls.
It's tall, man.
There was no way to adjust the temperature without touching your mouth hole on your thermos.
Everything's bigger with the links to, I'm like Texas. I'm like Texas,
I
man.
I think you're just compensating for something.
Yeah, I like to drink coffee, homie. And listen, I was the gracious, you never would have even known that your finger was touching my mouth place on my coffee mug, you know?
Don't say mouth place. Just don't use that terminology.
Did you sanitize?
I have since sanitized.
I wonder what you touched on yourself after you touched my mouth.
I don't know if anybody's got video evidence of this, but I feel like I've gotten better at not touching my face.
So you don't know if people have video evidence of you not doing something? Like that's not how evidence works.
No, you don't. You don't understand.
I'm gonna present reams of video, and in none of this video for the next two weeks.
You're misunderstanding. I think everyone.
You are not gonna see
along.
Me touch myself.
So if you have, you know, approximately a decade, and more specifically about 7 years of a daily show of a person being themselves in their natural environment, that natural environment being a desk that he shares with another man.
That natural environment, Rhett, is a set. How do you reconcile
that? I'm there
that?
So much that it's my natural environment.
Okay, it's and not I'm really a basement.
My theory is, and I don't, listen, don't do this because I don't want anybody to do this, but my theory is that my frequency of touching my own face has decreased over time.
Sure.
Because I just feel like I've become more conscious. Now I'll touch the hair.
You'll touch
that's
the top
not,
of the hair.
This isn't the face. In fact—
The face begins where the hair ends.
They call this, I heard somebody call this like the golden triangle or
he's
something like that.
He's pointing at his mustache.
I don't know if it's your
and
eyes,
if you can't
your
hear
mouth.
Him, he's calling it a golden triangle.
Your eyes, your mouth, and your nose, but it's basically an ungodly high percentage of the crap that will make you sick goes in through this place.
Yeah.
It's not like you're getting a cut somewhere and getting a cold. I mean, it does happen, but it's going in through the golden triangle. I don't know if that's the term.
What is the constellation that forms this golden triangle? Your two eyes in your mouth?
It might be your two nostrils in your mouth.
Well,
that's not really a triangle though. That's more of a trapezoid. But your eyes have holes. Your eyes are holes. Your eyes get stuff too. Don't touch your face.
Let's not forget eyes. They get stuff too, guys.
I believe that I touch my face less.
I touch my face when I think
have I touched
about
my face yet?
Germs.
How often do you touch your face?
A lot, man. I'm sick, dude.
No. Lily, you're not sick.
Lily gave me this, and I don't think she was touching my face. Sometimes I'm doing that dad thing where I'm like, wouldn't it be funny if I acted like I was poking you in the eye? I probably poked my daughter in the eye for the fun of it.
Let me just say, not a dad thing. Like. No other dads do that. Just speaking
I'm a
for
dad.
Speaking for
I'm speaking
all,
for one
all
dad.
Other dads, hey, I'm gonna poke you in the eye. That's not a thing that dads do. What do you mean?
Graze it. I don't know, man. Yeah, again, I don't remember doing it. I'm just saying, it seems weird for me to say, I just touched my face. I touched my daughter's face.
I just touched my face. I'm very conscious of it.
Yeah, you did.
I touched my beard. Is that part of the triangle? I think that's just outside of the triangle.
Below the triangle. You went over the mouth.
Can bacteria go up these hairs and get into
what
the mouth?
What is happening? Did we both just get, are we really caffeinated? This is a different ear biscuit. You never know what you're gonna get.
We've had an interesting day. We traveled to the west side.
It's been weird.
Always a little bit exciting to see the other side of Los Angeles.
We ate brunch out.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell them about the lobby.
Okay,
and then tell them about the brunch.
Yeah, we had quite a day. So this was the two of us and Stevie going to a meeting. You know, we're always meeting with people.
Tell them what the meeting's about.
The meeting is about making something awesome into something even better.
But different, on another medium.
It's about something we really want to happen, we really want you to see.
Because we wrote it and we knew we wanted it to be on television. I mean, I don't know why we can't talk about this.
I haven't thought about it, but you just talked about it. Yeah, I don't think there's any reason not to talk about it.
If we think about it, there might be a reason not to talk about it, but I think that's stupid. Well, you know what we're talking about.
But in this particular place this is the reason that I didn't want to say what the meeting was about, because now I'm going to give characteristics of the lobby of the place that we were, and now people are going to know where it is.
When you tell the people, when you tell the listener what it is we experienced, then it will be clear to everyone involved that the people who made the decision for the thing to be there wanted us to talk about it. So we are exonerated.
That's not exactly what I was getting at, but it's cool. They have a koi pond in their lobby. And for all, in every other way, it's a pretty nondescript lobby. There's not anything.
It's not big.
Like sometimes you go into I don't know if you've ever been into the lobby of CAA, the agency, the talent agency.
It's not our agent.
That not our agent, but I have been
it's
in
like
the lobby.
Like not a sponsor.
I do visit other lobbies. I'm kind of a lobby connoisseur.
Now, if you visit other agents, our agents are going to start getting shaking in the boots.
No, I just went to look at the lobby, and also I'm also a foyer connoisseur. Any you know, sort of like the beginning of going into a building, whether it's a home or a building, I'm really into.
None of this makes you a douche. Go ahead.
But the this lobby was rather unimpressive, except for the fact that they had a koi pond.
Now, I will say, when you hear Rhett say they have a koi pond, I would venture to guess that you picture like a foliage draped environment with like a dark water with some sort of sediment at the bottom, like a pond. And you would be wrong. But I wouldn't blame you for it because that's what I would picture. Matter of fact, even when he said koi pond just then, I still pictured it, even though I was there and that's not what it was.
It's pretty much just a sort of a rectangle in the middle of a floor.
It was like the tile that made up the floor, then if you went down a foot and a half and then you laid more of that same tile. It was very modern.
But you think the koi need more than that?
I immediately felt sorry for the koi.
What brings a koi joy? Do you know? Koi joy.
Rhett, you got me. I don't know.
I believe that koi joy is found in just being koi.
Let's come back to that. So it's just a square area with approximately 420 gallons of water.
But of course, things like koi ponds and lobbies usually aren't the kind of thing that we cannot experience and then not begin asking questions to whoever's closest, which happened to be the woman who was manning the desk.
I guess she
was womaning the desk.
We had a good meeting, so after the meeting, we were kind of flying high, and Stevie went to the bathroom, so we're just mulling around.
And I'm like, hey.
Like two old men with their hands in their pockets looking at koi.
And I'm like, hey, receptionist. I didn't call her that. I just was like, hey, you responsible for these koi? And she said, well, yeah. I mean, if one of them jumps out. What? If one of them jumps out.
Okay, yeah, don't get paranoid, lady.
She was like, well, I said, does that happen? She says, yes, it happens, and they're very slippery. And so that's when, and then she picks up the male, like little tray, the caged kind of male tray. And she's like, and
like
that's-
Like a basket, like a wire
a
basket,
basket
that you hold letters.
She's like, I put that on top of the koi and I pushed the koi back into the koi pond. So it's not a male tray, it's a koi pusher. They got koi pushers.
Koi catcher.
It's a koi catcher.
It's a koi catcher that brings me joy. The weird thing she said was, yes, yeah, so sometimes like big trucks will go by and then they'll get kind of agitated and they'll jump out.
Wouldn't you?
I don't know. I as if I didn't feel sorry enough for these koi.
But just think about it. You're just a koi. You don't know. Think about how, that's why they're jumping out. They want to see what the heck is driving by. It's like—
I don't think they want.
You don't think they have wants?
I don't think they have wants or joys.
Why do you have so much of a clear idea of what a koi needs? Do you own one?
Well, we had friends who house sat for a couple that had a bunch of koi. You know this, Rhett.
Yeah, and all the koi died because somebody did something stupid with the water.
And who was sad?
Well, none of the koi were because they all died.
Bingo. How much? He had to pay like $75,000.
Koi are very expensive fish, especially if they're old and rare. But
they can live like 111 years.
Yeah, something like that. Sometimes koi will be left in someone's will.
Yeah.
Because koi outlive the boys. After the koi pond—
pushing it a little too hard there.
The koi pond excursion—
trying to make a t-shirt.
We had a little bit of time before our next appointment. Lots of appointments today. And so we got a little brunch and we needed a quick bite, but we wanted to be a little bit fancy. And so for the first time ever, we go to, well, okay. I'm not gonna say the name of it because that's really what makes this story funny. So we decide on this place that is a chain restaurant that serves breakfast and coffee.
Well, it's like Panera, but it's—
a little fancier.
Yeah, you should spell it. It's French.
It's French. In French, it's the pickle bread or something like that.
Q-U-O, no, L-E space,
P-A-I-N,
which is, that's bread in French.
Yep, yep.
And then another word, Q-U-O-T-E-D-I-E-N-E. Q-U-O-T-I-D-I-E-N. Yeah, yeah. I was close enough, Jacob. I just got two letters wrong.
So there's a parking garage underneath this particular establishment because there's multiple stores or restaurants. So we go downstairs and the woman, like the parking attendant stops us. She says,
"You're driving."
She says, "Where are you going?" And I froze because I don't know how to say this place. And of course, Link leans over and says, "La Pequetan."
Just like that.
"La Pequetan." And I was like, what language was that?
I was just so enthusiastic because I was like, ooh, I know the answer to this. "La Pequetan."
No, you did not say it. You did not say it in a French accent. You said it in some other accent.
"La Pequetan." And I wasn't being funny.
But it was funny.
I knew the answer. And we needed to park.
And I then said, we all started laughing. Well, me and Stevie started laughing, and you laughed. And the parking attendant woman sort of smiled, and I said, you know, they really need a new name for that place. And she said, LPQ.
LPQ.
And that's what they call it. There they call it there. They call it LPQ because they don't, so they don't have to say, "La Pain Contentant."
Oh man, it feels good to say it.
Yeah.
It gives the coy joy. La Pequetan.
So we have had quite a day.
The menu was very promising, and the Yelp reviews were like, there were over 700 Yelp reviews of this place, and it had over 4 stars, like almost 4.5 stars.
It wasn't bad. It's just
and then it wasn't good.
Well, it wasn't bad. The menu made me get really excited, and then I just didn't feel like it completely delivered on the menu. Also, the coffee mug had no handle.
I looked over. This chick was over there drinking her coffee, and she was holding it like a treasured bowl that you would like
serve the king.
Oh yes, the monarch needs to drink of this, or something the Pope would like use ceremoniously. Like that's how she was bringing it to her lips.
And then you look over
at me, and I was like,
me,
why is she doing that?
And I was doing the same
you
thing.
You were doing the same thing.
Because you don't feel like
I
you can-
I think that's what a quintadon is.
You don't feel
is.
Like you can grab it with one hand.
What is a quintadon?
You said it was pickles.
I know, and you fell for it. I got you. Yeah, I got you. My whole day you've been thinking a quintadon is a pickle.
Yeah, I know, but here's the thing.
Because it was on his plate.
That's not the kind of thing you joke about, just to be just honestly. Like that's the kind of
just
thing
because
I
you
joke
fell
about.
For it.
No. Like you usually
oh, this is your type of joke.
No, you don't normally do purposely deceptive humor. Like that's the kind of thing I like tell my kids is like, you know, the quante don't it means pickle. And so you typically know French cuz like you
I typically do, yeah.
No, it's funny. We both took 3 years of French, right. But you retained a significantly higher
well,
portion than me.
Je mange les haricots verts.
French for the daily bread.
Is the whole name of the restaurant.
The daily bread. Quintadon means day, daily.
Okay. Men shall not live by bread alone.
It doesn't mean the bread and pickles, sorry.
And if you were to rewind and re-experience this ear biscuit, you would hear at the top, Rhett gave a shout out to pickles.
The pickle bread or something like that.
Because he was falling for my joke. And that really gave me coy joy. That's why you do it.
It's quite a long play.
Exactly.
Okay, so I feel like I can still recommend the restaurant. Just personally, I would say that I think you should try it. But I do think that you should say LPQ just to not embarrass yourself. Unless you're French.
When you go to a French restaurant, do you order by initials? Do you give it a shot?
No, I'm a CPK.
California Pizza Kitchen?
Yeah, that's French, right?
Yes.
Apartments.com has more rental listings than anywhere else. So finding the perfect place is easier than ever, and so is finally moving in together, just the two of you.
It's a big step. Lots of new responsibilities, lots of adjustments. Most likely, they'll wake you up at odd hours to go to the bathroom.
And you'll most definitely find yourself in trouble coming home late for dinner. They may even unroll all your toilet paper next time. It's just what happens when you two find a new place together.
But you're not doing it because you feel like it. No, you're doing it because you love them, because they're family. And that's why Apartments.com has more pet-friendly rental listings on the internet. Did you know that's what we were talking about?
Yes.
Pets. So that you and your furry family can find the perfect new place together.
Apartments.com, the place to find a pet-friendly place. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Let's start with a question from Annie, known as Celestial Link. I guess that's in reference to you, Link, on Twitter.
Yeah, if I weren't me, I would still devote my entire Twitter experience to me.
If you could
go— that would be my choice as well.
If you could go back in time and bring one current invention with you, which you would be credited for inventing, what would you bring and why? So you go back in time, you can take something with you, and you will be credited with inventing it.
Is there a size limitation on this time traveling device? Let's say no.
I would say no.
I have a specific answer that then leads to a more general and powerful answer. You know what, I'm gonna do it in reverse. I have a general answer, but then I have a more specific. Can I just answer? You wanna go first?
No, I'm interested. I do have an answer, but now I'm very intrigued.
I would take, back in time, I would take an Arobi. You remember the Arobi?
I do, finally.
When we were in college, we could not be satisfied with a normal spinning, flying projectile that you can throw and catch in the little grass patch beside your apartment. No, we had to get the world's longest flying device that can be thrown from hand to hand. We had to get the Arobi.
It's quite an amazing flying disc.
Arobie, for
flying
those of
ring.
You Googling this, the flying ring.
They make a boomerang version as well. They make two different sizes, maybe three different sizes.
It actually comes back to you. But they do not float. They will fly a long way.
They will sink in water.
And they will sink in water because we've lost a few Arobies in some ponds.
And not just ponds, they fly so far. Sometimes they would just go into the woods and we would never ever find them again.
Let me tell you, some of the most exhilarating experiences I think we ever had were just getting so far from each other that we were questioning whether we were still looking at our friend.
Yeah.
And chucking this Arobi and then just seeing it soar, and then the thrill of seeing that person catch it. Mm. And I gotta hand it to us, man. We were good at throwing an Arobi.
We weren't great at catching it though.
Well, it's not hard to catch it. We were good at catching it. If you don't catch it, it's pointless.
And
it's
it kind
like
of
fail.
It catches the wind and sort of like hovers and
you think,
whoa!
You'd think you were about to catch it and you'd be right here with your hands like splayed out in front of your face. And then all of a sudden when it was like 5 feet out and rapidly approaching, it would catch a breeze like a hawk going over a canyon.
Yeah,
like catching
a thermal.
And it would take off and it would go another 400 yards, it felt like.
Well, it felt like.
It'd go another 38 yards.
Well,
I would take one of those back in time.
There's no place in Los Angeles to throw one of these. There's no open space large enough.
The reason why this is top of mind is because Lando, we had some unstructured time where we were hanging out a couple weekends ago, and I was like, whatever you wanna do, bud, let's do it. And his answer immediately was, I wanna go buy a tetherball. That was his answer.
Yeah, this is a child that is used to not having a lot of space.
So he
needs a ball tied to a pole.
Right.
That's its idea of fun.
They do it, they play tetherball at school and he fancied himself a semi-pro.
Now you didn't buy him one, did you?
Hell yeah, I bought him one.
Okay.
I asked him whatever he wanted, I'll do it. So I called the Big Five and I was like, do you have tetherballs? And they were like, yeah.
Of course they do.
So
that's pretty much what they're known for.
Tetherballs are us, I think is what they used to be called. They were like, yeah, we got those. So we go over there, I'm like, well, they only have one left. I was like, this woman was risking a lot and just like that snap answer.
Well, it's
like,
probably been there for weeks.
She should have said, we only got one left. You better get over here right now. I was like, Lando, okay. We're just snatch it, buddy. Because
you're buying the one tetherball people have bought in 2019. Like, okay, now call the factory. We got to get another tetherball because they're coming in to get it.
As we were leaving with that tetherball, I saw a guy walk in and I was like, I looked at Lando, I was like, he's gonna be disappointed. I could tell he wanted a tetherball. But before we checked out, I went past and they had an Arobi. And I was like, Lando, look at this. And I told him the story that I just told you.
Way better than a tetherball.
And we also bought a $10 Arobi.
They don't have the big ones though.
Yeah, they do. Yep.
Okay, you got a big one?
Yep.
Where are you gonna throw that?
Well, we went to the park and they had a tetherball pole. That's why he knew he wanted to buy a tetherball. Because
oh, you didn't buy the pole and the base, you just bought the ball and the string.
Right.
You find your own pole.
A legit pole at the nearby playground.
Bring your own ball and tether.
There was no ball or tether there. It was just a pole.
Wow, what is the world coming to?
I know, man. You can't leave a tetherball hanging around. Someone's gonna take that.
Oh yeah, just like rims.
Taking the rims off a souped up Civic.
Interesting that you would take an Aerobie back. So you think that would gain you fame and fortune? Because that was kind of how I approached this.
No, because I think it would be cool and people would think I was awesome. But then as I was like making the rounds, like selling tickets for like my exhibitions of throwing the Aerobie and whatnot, and I would also educate the people about the aerodynamic design, which would then lead to the invention of the airplane wing, because I would go back that far in time. Because, you know, even on the Aerobie packaging, it talks about how it achieves lift like a wing because of the way the lip is designed, I believe. So I would actually go back in time. I was gonna just say I was gonna take a wing of a plane with me.
Yeah, but then the Wright brothers would have invented a giant Frisbee and we still wouldn't be flying. You'd probably screw the whole thing up. You know what I'm saying? It's like, all right, no, Orville.
Well, I can-
Trash the plans.
I can tell by
There's a man with a flying disc.
I can tell by your ridicule that you are tracking with my statement.
So would you take it to the Wright brothers?
I would pre-live the Wright brothers. I would be there in the late 1800s.
Why don't you just skip the Aerobie and go for plane?
I already answered that.
Okay.
But the wow factor.
I think the wow factor of inventing aviation, because who invented the Aerobie in this universe?
That's because the plane already
existed. Do you know
his
name? No, you don't.
Well, if the plane didn't exist, then you would know his name. And that's when I'm going back in time with an Aerobie to invent flight.
I took a different tack. I would, this is a difficult thing to take back. I admit that. I would take public storage back.
What? Oh, you greedy bastard.
Okay, so.
I see where you're going with this.
The guy who invented public storage is a guy named Brad Hughes. He is worth $2.2 billion.
Good gosh.
In 1980.
All he did was nothing.
No, the story goes like this, my friend. He needed to store some stuff and he had a warehouse and it was completely full. And he was like, what am I gonna do? And he came up with the idea for what he called private storage, which actually makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, it does.
But then when he took it to market, he had changed it to public storage.
For marketing reasons?
I don't know. So he is he's like 85 years old. The dude's worth over $2 billion because he just came up with the idea that there should be little cubby holes for adults out in the world that you can just pay for. And no one thought of this until the 80s. I mean, take that, Aerobie.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You just go back with in fact, I'd probably go, my time machine would probably be the storage bin. And then I would just unsheath it and come out and be like, this is not only a time machine, that's not really what's important. Put your stuff in here, pay a monthly fee. Hand me your money. Now, here's the other thing, because I also was thinking about the time period. You're gonna go back to the late 1800s?
Okay.
Before antibiotics, I'm going back to 1980, brother. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Tom Cruise
like,
movies.
You basically have all the luxuries of modern times. There's less channels, first of all. You know what I'm saying? I take all my my storage money and I just cruise around in a boat. You could come with your Aerobie. We could toss it on. I mean, my boat would be so big that you could throw a full-size Aerobie on it.
But flight wouldn't exist because I wouldn't have gone back in time.
Is that okay? So they're not mutually exclusive. You could also.
I think public storage is like the one thing that the majority of people on Earth, when polled, could agree upon as being abhorrent. Like there's just something about it.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
That's like,
you know what?
I'm having a negative response to
public storage. Okay, how about this? Beanie Babies, that guy's worth $1.9 billion.
Oh, is this your runner up?
And all you have to do is take a Beanie Baby back and you could take that back to 1986 because that's when he invented that.
That guy's a chump, man.
But it's a lot easier to travel
with
a Beanie Baby
with
through
beans
time.
In it.
You know? So I, maybe I
now,
just,
see
you know
that
what,
fits,
no, you know what I would
that
do?
That fits your brand.
I'd take a,
talking about beans.
I'd take a storage bin full of Beanie Babies back. And I'd be like, I got two ideas for you fools.
Be like, well, I gotta get a lot of Beanie Babies before I can justify this public storage thing.
I think we've answered that.
Shauna Brown asks, is it better to be knowledgeable or better to be ignorant? In other words, is ignorant truly bliss, or is it better to have knowledge of something even if it means it can cause pain or chaos? I'd say a corollary question, which we gleaned from Facebook, from Megan Elizabeth Taylor. Yes,
wow.
That Megan Elizabeth Taylor. Would you rather be a worried genius or a joyful simpleton? Is ignorance truly bliss? And how did you approach this question in your brain? I don't know your answer, of course.
Well, I took it, would I rather be the kind of, my state of being as a person would be someone who is knowledgeable about everything, including the things that might potentially bring me anxiety and trouble, or someone who is just unawares of things that might bring worry. And so as someone who is at least somewhat knowledgeable about enough things to bring myself anxiety and trouble, I would say that my knee-jerk reaction is to say that me personally, in the current state, I want to know things. Like when we talked about
the simulation.
Well,
I mean,
no,
all of that
well,
stuff.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
want to. You want. You. You're always opting for knowledge.
And we talked about the.
Are you going the other way?
No. I'm saying me. This version of me wants to know things, including like you know. We talked about this on 23andMe. Maybe we talked about this, but you can like basically check. Yes, I want to know if I've got the
predisposition to Parkinson's disease.
Right, do I have these specific genetic markers that lead to these illnesses?
I actually don't know if that's one specifically.
I don't know what they are, but I checked all of those and looked at all the information. Like as soon as I had the opportunity to, my instinct was just to look.
So, right, but in this,
but that's
in the
not
way
how
this
I
is
pr-
framed,
this.
You're saying if you could snap your fingers and just be a different person, like different brain personality makeup, you would opt to check your intelligence at the door and walk in anticipating that what? You would be a happier person.
Well, let me just say that I don't think that I'm unhappy. I don't think that I'm currently unhappy. But if I had to choose between like that, the way that the second question was phrased, worried genius or joyful simpleton, like if you're actually saying the state of the genius is that they're worried or the state of the simpleton is that they're joyful, I would definitely choose joyful simpleton. And I wouldn't know what I was unaware of. And so I'm—
Yeah, you wouldn't know what you don't know.
I'm all about that, man. I would definitely choose that if I had the choice.
I'm surprised by that. I just feel like that's really incongruent. I still don't get it. I'm just trying to understand what you're saying.
I'm saying that me right now, if there's something to be known—
In this version of me. It's basically, would you rather be happy instead of knowledgeable? Burdened with some sort of knowledge or freed to just be happy?
Yeah, and I understand that this seems inconsistent with my answer about the like the simulation, the matrix, and like, would you— But the way I was thinking about that is that I actually knew that there was a possibility that there was something else and I could experience it by unplugging myself from the matrix and then experiencing the real world.
Yeah. This you're so
this is like
ignorant.
I'm literally
you do not know
my mind what, in this sense would not be able to comprehend anything that would bring me worry. Then I'm saying if the alternative is being able to comprehend those things and then bringing me grief, then I would choose the joyful simpleton. And if you're giving me these two choices.
And I thought that's what I would choose too, but the way that I immediately thought about it, I'm like, what are situations that I would opt to not know about in order to, it like, because when people talk about ignorance is bliss, they're usually talking about a specific subset of knowledge, like related to something. Like, but then I tried to come up with what would be that thing that's burdensome that I would be happier if I didn't know about it. But then I'm like, well, climate change. Well, no. I mean, it's I, obviously I would rather know about that so that I can be engaged in being part of the solution, you know, even though it weighs heavily on the mind. It's actually like creeping up constantly in the back of my mind. And I think I'm sure you would agree that's a good thing. You know, we need more of that. More of that.
Concern, yeah.
Yeah, just like a discomfort associated with just the seething of our planet.
What if it was more personal?
Okay, so I have a personal example.
Okay.
If you have a relative who, they've got some indication that something's wrong with them, and then they have tests done, and then they're waiting on the test to come back. And especially being like across the country, it's not like you talk to them every day or you see them and like, you know, where were you yesterday? Oh, I went into the doctor. It's like, they kind of have to volunteer this information. And yes, this has happened. And I think, maybe we've talked about this, but there's an inclination to like say, I'm gonna spare you the knowledge that I'm awaiting a test because we think something's wrong and it may be bad news. I'm gonna wait until I get the results back and then I'm gonna give those to you. And then I'm like, well, yeah, I understand that instinct. I too have that instinct. It's like, I don't wanna burden my mom with something that's happening when I don't really have answers or there's nothing actionable. Like, just as an example. But I second guess that, you know, it's, as another example. So then I'm like, I actually don't think that works because, you know, you're denying their ability to love you through the unknown. And that's you know, that happens in life. And no one should go through the unknown where they can only wring their own hands. You want to be able to hold hands with somebody, so to speak. That was my personal example. That didn't work either. So I'm actually unable to come up with anything that I would rather not know when I approach it from that way.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm saying is that you're approaching it from this point in time,
sure,
with these life circumstances. So yeah,
you think of one? Can you think of a practical example within that way of approaching the problem that's like, actually it's better not to know?
No, and I think we talked about this before. It's like, my tendency is to believe that knowledge about something, like data related to anything, is ultimately better.
Knowledge is power.
Than not having it, than not knowing something, because you're gonna be able to do something, even if it's like knowing when you're gonna die. You know, I don't know if we've specifically talked about that situation. But I think I would wanna know. I think I would wanna know.
Right, but so skipping back to the other way, do you feel like you know or have known people who are more of they're in more of an ignorant and blissful zone? I think I know people that way.
Well, okay.
Do you wish you were one of those people? Because I think that brings it into focus.
No, because I'm not unhappy. What I'm saying is, this is how I interpret the question. Let's just say I'm in the ether. My soul is in the ether before I inhabit my next body. I'm not saying I believe that this is how the world works, but
let's just say that
this is how the world works.
You wouldn't say it if it was.
And whoever makes the decision about what body you end up in says, Rhett, of course they have the voice of Morgan Freeman, which I can't do.
That wasn't an
impersonation of him, but this is my voice, so I'll use that. He says, I'm gonna give you a choice in this lifetime. Would you like to be a worried genius or a joyful simpleton? And I was like, those are my choices? Like if I choose genius, I'm gonna be like a worried, tortured genius, you know? Like Nietzsche, or
La Pain Quotidien.
Or you're going to be a joyful simpleton, meaning you're gonna be somebody who no one knows about. You're not gonna make any history. You're not going to accomplish anything that is great in the eyes of humans.
Have you seen Forrest Gump? Ha!
But you know, no, Forrest Gump was tortured. He was knowledgeable enough to be tortured about Jenna. So I'm talking about somebody who is just happy, but may need other people to take care of them. I don't know what they might need. I would choose that scenario if presented with those two options. Okay. But if it was just like, would you rather be ignorant or knowledgeable? I would choose knowledgeable.
Okay. I'm gonna choose to be burdened and knowledgeable.
Let's answer the question that we started this whole thing off with.
Let's pay off that title.
This is from Hannah Brooks.
Unless it sucks and then we change it.
Hannah Brooks asks, your 20s are the best years of your life.
Mm-hmm.
In quotes, as if someone told her this. Do you agree with this? What were the best years of your life and why?
The 20s is, it's interesting because I usually think of it in terms of like middle school, high school, college, out of college, early, you know, married with, that's how I divide up my life. Married, then married with children.
Yeah.
And then I can also think about it in terms of our career and I can like start to put different strata in there. But like the 20s, that's the end of, that's like the tail end of college, right? Yeah.
Well, for us, it basically
turned
encompassed
21 as a
the end of college, getting yeah. married, and mostly everything that we did before we really became full-time YouTubers. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it was before we had really found our calling.
Boy.
To what we do, to what we kind of have settled into now. It was a bit of a strange time.
It was a strange.
Figuring things out.
Yeah, and there was a lot of, it was high stake peril. You know, it was like, okay, what are we gonna do? Why are we gonna, you know, what the heck is going on? Cause I feel like I'm tempted to say the best days of my life. You know, I'd be tempted to hone in on the college years because those were some great years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got this budding freedom. You've got this blossoming self-discovery. It's almost falling on you like a dump truck. Mm-hmm. Like you're getting, self-discovery is being dumped on you. You're just getting buried in it.
Yeah.
That's exhilarating. Well, you know, you hold your breath and then you're like trying to breathe and get out from underneath it.
And I think the reason that adults will often say to young folk, you know, really enjoy this time. Take it, you know, these are the best years of your life. And they may be talking about high school or college or whatever. I think what they're actually saying is, if I, with my knowledge and life experience and wisdom that I have garnered in the years that I've lived, were able to go back
yeah.
to high school or go back to college, oh man, I would just be able to do it right this time. But yeah, when you're in the midst of it, you don't really understand. And this is every stage of life.
So just to unpack that a little bit. Yeah, because basically you're not saying, when I look back, that was the best strata of my life that I'm experienced.
Youth is wasted
on the young is what you're saying. You're saying that if I could go back and redo it, I could most definitely make it the best time of my life, that decade.
Well, I'm not saying that I didn't take advantage of it and that I didn't take advantage of that freedom. And I specifically remember like that first week of college of like just coming back to my dorm room whenever I wanted to and thinking, this is awesome. Having responsibility for just myself is really awesome. Now, at the same time, I was really, not as much as you, now that I didn't even know at the time because you didn't really talk about it, I was really concerned about my academics. I was, especially at freshman, sophomore year, I was like super committed to studying and making good grades, and I do recommend making good grades. But I think I placed a little too much importance on that, honestly. I kind of got into a little bit better groove in my junior and senior year, and I think they were the best years of my life in one sense.
Are you talking about college? You're not talking about 20s though. You're talking about college.
Yeah.
Okay.
Considering the nature of the discovery, the nature of like the fact that we sit down and have these like philosophical conversations that you had never really had in high school, and really meaningful friendships that went beyond sort of the typical high school friendship, like true friends and independent living, an independent experience with like being able to go off and say, we're gonna take a trip to somewhere. We're gonna go camping together, us four guys or whatever.
Yeah.
Those are things that there were so many firsts without any parental supervision.
What?
That it was,
and it's not,
awesome.
And not just, and our lives were different because right out of college, we got married. But like when we were talking to Stevie on the way to that meeting, she was like, what was the show she asked us if we saw? It was like, it was about Dead to Me. She was like, have you seen Dead to Me? We're like, no, I never even heard of it. She's like, well, it's a good concept. I don't know how well it was executed, but it's binge worthy. And I'm like thinking, I'm you know, I'm not in my 20s. I don't sit around and just look for stuff that's just borderline binge worthy. I've got like, I didn't jump down Stevie's throat. This is all in my brain, but I'm like, I've got children and I've got all the stuff that I'm doing within my own parameters.
The only binging,
I got a bedtime.
The only binging that has taken place for me is those 2 days that I was on my back after the vasectomy.
Right.
And you can really only get a vasectomy once. I might get my vasectomy reversed just so I could get it again, just so I can binge watch television. I mean, that's literally the only binge watching I've done in 15 years.
Stevie's still in her 20s, isn't she?
No, she's 31, man.
Whoops. Not in my mind. Well, sorry, Stevie. I just mean everybody here is in their 20s in my mind.
Okay, thanks for clarifying.
Whoops. But you know what
so
I'm saying.
So what's your point?
My point is, what is my point? My point is like the 20s are the time for a lot of people where it's like, they just got time to do stuff. But for us, the 20s were, we've thrust ourselves into marriage. And
thrust is probably not the best
we've
word.
We've been catapulted out of college and out from under like any sort of financial support that our families or whatever offered. And now we're like, we're trying to make this happen. I mean, this was like a scrappy time. I mean, it was nerve-wracking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was talking about, you know, we both had our engineering jobs and we were hating them, and I wasn't realize I was hating them until you kept insisting on how much I should be hating it. And then I was like, yeah, man, you're right. Let's figure out something else. Let's get together one night a week and come up with comedy.
Yeah, comedy night.
You know, come up with comedy. Then get up the next morning and get to the spreadsheets, you know? And like Christy was teaching, she had a math degree and she taught high school math. She taught geometry and junk like that. And she was like going crazy, going nuts, just trying to figure out how to teach high schoolers. And she was only like 4.5 years older than some of her students.
Mm-hmm.
She laid down the law the first day. She's like sending people out right and left. It was like, it was carnage. But
paddling him?
Yeah.
She was a paddler.
Spank me, Miss Neal. That doesn't work. She didn't fall for that one. But it, you know, and so we're both like putting our heads together and trying to figure out how we survive. You know,
right?
Like,
but you look, I mean,
I'm house sitting for this couple.
You look
out of the country and like we're taking care of a full grown Weimaraner.
Yeah, but you look back on those times with nostalgia.
No, I don't.
I do.
I do. Well,
anytime that there's
that period,
that scrappy
difficult.
Period,
like first year of marriage, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
Well, let me just tell you the way that.
And Chrissy would say the same thing. You skip that.
Well, you can't. I process this in this way. Okay, I'm 41. And, they're especially related to like personal health and I, you know, physical and emotional health are things that it isn't that I haven't cared about those things, but I have in the past, you know, decade or so, especially probably the past half decade, just getting older has sort of forced me to be like, I've kind of got to get on top of this. And I'll use my back as an example of something that has sort of applied to a lot of different areas of my life.
Yeah, talk about your back problems.
So I never did anything about my back when I was in high school and when I was in college. Never did anything in my 20s. Didn't really do anything about them in my early 30s, but when it became like, okay, this is gonna be a problem. Like if I don't do something about this, I'll be in a wheelchair someday. Like I will be disabled. I'm not kidding. Like my back problems were that bad that if I didn't do something about them, I was going to be disabled. And so I started to do the things that I started to do and continue to do. And now it's like my back is healthier than it was when I was in high school in terms of the way that it feels and how often I have pain, right? And that's like a daily struggle to continue to do the things that I need to do. But what I think a lot of times, I'm like, man, when I was 22 years old, like I had a 22-year-old's spine. You know what I'm saying? Like now I've got probably like a 60-year-old spine because I didn't do anything all that time. And so the way I kind of process it is, yes, those were good times, but I've actually had and again, the back is just an example of other things. Like, again, I just started going to therapy last year. So it wasn't like there was necessarily some acute problem. There were some things that kind of came up that led me to finally say, okay, yeah, I do need to go to therapy. But there was a lot of years where
you don't
just
think going blind was an acute problem?
Yeah, I'm saying that was like one of the things that
okay.
That it wasn't going blind. You can listen to that podcast. But there was an acute problem that kind of sent me over the edge. All that to say though is that I feel like now the thing that I can't line up is caring about yourself and taking actual steps to care for yourself and set that on top of youth. Like that would be an incredible thing. And maybe that doesn't happen because when you're young, you just don't feel a need to address these things in the same way.
Yeah.
You're like, I have got all my life.
Youth is wasted on the young. But to answer the question, are you saying that the 20s, or maybe you're saying college, either one, was the best decade of your life? I'm not talking like retrofit it. I'm talking about just for what it was.
I think, and maybe this is just the futuristic, optimistic part of me, I still always have a sense that I am entering into the best years of my life. Now, you know what I'm saying? I'm saying like, it didn't get much better.
That seems weird to me in a good way.
It doesn't get that much better than I experienced in my 20s in college and all those cool memories or whatever. But there were things about me, the way I thought, the way I approached life and relationships, et cetera, that I'm glad I don't still think and do the things that I did at the time. I like the me that I am now more than the me that I was then. And I would hope that that is a progression that continues. I hope when I'm 50, I look back at 41-year-old Rhett, and I like the me now more than I like the me then. Like, what else is life about, right? Now there's this sort of sinking feeling that eventually age will become an insurmountable problem, and that no matter what you do, you're gonna die of something, you're gonna have chronic pain or whatever, maybe there's nothing I can do about my back 20 years from now, who knows? Not looking forward to that and answering those questions. But I'm just saying that, and I told this to Jesse, I was like, I think that my 40s are gonna be the best years of my life. And then I think when I enter into my 50s, I'm hoping that my perspective will be, you know, I think my 50s are gonna be the best years of my life.
Yeah,
that's my attitude.
I've already ruled out the 20s, and I told you why.
Okay.
So I think for me, I think the nows, because I'm 40, you know, I don't think it was the 30s. I think, I agree. I feel like I'm in year one, you're in year two of the best decade. I think the 50s won't be as good. Hey, what about grandkids?
Why, man?
I don't think that's gonna help enough. I think
Kids are gonna be like 50 before they have children. That's gonna happen.
I'm the best, I feel like I'm the best version of myself that I've ever been. And I want to be an even better version of myself. And I think I'm on that journey semi-aggressively. And I think that's a big part of, that's a big part of what makes me satisfied, is that I feel like I'm growing and knowing more about myself, discovering more of myself and who I can be. Self-realization, I guess you call that.
And I actually think that I think we grew up with this, I'm sorry to interrupt, but to add to what you're saying, I think that we kind of had this, and I feel like there's a little bit of an American ideal here to be like, you stay the same. He's the guy that he was when he was, I'm still the same man that I was when I was 20 years old. I'm still the same man, you know what I'm saying? And it's like,
don't confuse it with a Southern accent.
I'm saying that I'm from the South, and in many different ways, that mentality was around me.
Okay.
And so that's how I'm characterizing it.
All right, that's fair.
But I'm not making a judgment about the South, I'm making a judgment about who I was and where I come from. And what I'm saying is that I believe that constant growth and constant change is actually a sign of health. not stagnation.
Well, yeah, I mean, if it's the right kind of change.
Of course. Yeah, of course. Of course. Change in the right direction. But I'm like, what is life if it isn't change in the right direction? Like what, if you're not evolving in a certain direction.
You're only dying, because you are dying. You might as well be growing and living at the same time.
And the idea of settling into a way of thinking and a way of doing,
yeah,
as soon as I reach my adulthood and then just being that way forever. Now, maybe you were enlightened at age 21 and you just stayed the same. I'm not anywhere near enlightened, but I'm just trying to move in that direction. And so to me, that's what life has become for me, is being like, oh, this is what it's about. It's about right here. It's about this moment. It's about moving in the right direction.
Yeah, let me put it this way. You know, there's the phrase, live your best life. And I'm saying that to people constantly, like strangers in the mall. And
you
stuff.
And Joel Osteen?
Live your best life.
Did he
come up with that?
I think he has a book called Live Your Best Life Now.
Oh, okay. Well, he added now.
Crap.
I'm freaking deriving a Joel Osteen novel. Not novel.
Is it Osteen or Osteen?
Who cares? I don't care.
Osteen? Osteen? Well, you're talking about Osteen.
Ironically,
you're not talking
I didn't
about
realize
Osteen.
That his book was exactly what I'm saying, which is live your best life is something that you're constantly doing now. I totally agree with this
and
guy.
And this is when Joel Osteen walks in. Fellas, I'm so glad
that you finally figured it out.
You finally figured it out. Come to my big old church. We've got 700,000 people every Sunday.
I think you're it's making a decision to say, you know, you tend to focus on the future, and like you put it in terms of in the future, I want the future to be my best, but I want this week or this. I think it's unfair to say this day. And depending on what you're going through, it might be this week or this month
just
or this year.
Just say now, like Joel.
But I think having a mentality of, if I know that I don't have plans this weekend, and I can either say, well, you know, I'm gonna do nothing. I'm gonna let it come to me. I feel like for me personally, more often than not, that's a mistake, because it sets me up for not living my best life
now.
But instead, just kind of waiting for, it's like living for the weekend. It's like, what about Wednesday? What's my best Wednesday?
Now.
Or what if I am on the precipice of the weekend, or if I'm thinking about it, it's like, what's something that I can do that sets up, as we've talked about before in the context of the kids, what are some things that we could set up loosely, not grip too tightly, like the song goes, that will create the opportunity for an experience that could be the best of that, you know, the best experience I could have this day. And that may mean sitting on the couch and binge watching whatever Dead to Me is that I'm never gonna watch, by the way.
It's dead to you.
But you know what I'm getting at? It's like, I do feel like—
You're talking about living your best life now.
if you have a mentality of like, all right, I've got this, I'm gonna find some enjoyment or some fill in the blank that brings some bestness to it.
Yeah, you're talking about gratitude and mindfulness, and yeah, that is a challenge for me, because I'm so future oriented, and so I was,
and a lot of people are past oriented. They're like, man, those were the good old days.
Yeah, and
I look back. I think you looked back, and I do the same thing. And that's like, well, if I would have known that I had the back of a 20-year-old, I would have done things differently. I don't know what the, yeah, and again, that's
and
there's a, no,
I can't,
revisionist
and I can't
thing.
Do anything about
they
it.
I can't do anything about
I
it.
I don't have, and if I sounded this way, I didn't mean to. I don't have regrets about it necessarily. I'm just happy that, you know, I'm happy that my wife made me go to, you know, a certain physical therapist who finally gave me the right information, and one thing led to another, and I'm doing things that are helping my back live its best life now.
Are we just doing pop psychology, like vapid, empty pop psychology here? Or is it just that simple?
I honestly don't care if we are. If we are, who cares? Is it effective? Does it make
all we need is love.
Does it make a
difference?
Throw
that in there.
Because, you know, we're pretty complex creatures, us humans, and our brains, and we've got, like we've said before many times, and somebody else said it before me, we've got Stone Age hardware, and we're running modern day software on it. and it leads to a lot of different problems. And I think that you can live a life where you're constantly stressed out and there's a bunch of cortisol in your blood at all times.
Yeah.
Or you can find some simple coping mechanisms that help you get out of your own head and get out of your own way, separate yourself from your thoughts and realize that you are not your thoughts. And you know, find some joy in the moment and also look to the future with optimism. And I'm not saying that we have done this or are experts at it by any means. I think just what I'm saying is that we spent a lot of time, we're so focused on accomplishing things and succeeding at things that I think a good portion of the last couple of decades of our lives have just been completely consumed with trying to succeed. We've had no time to stop and think about things like personal health and growth in many ways because we've been so focused on our career and just trying to keep up with things and trying to be good dads and good husbands and the things and the responsibilities that we feel like the world has put on us. But I feel like the one addition that has happened to me in the past few years, and therapy has been the most tangible catalyst for this, is just this sense of working on myself. And it has made me, the thing I told Jesse, it was like, I feel just a lot more excited about the next chapter of my life. If I'm dividing my life into two halves, and I'm kind of entering into the second half, I am approaching it with a lot more excitement and not this sense of regret about what I didn't do, but more about what I'm gonna get to do. And of course, and it could all fall apart and I could face incredible disappointment and tragedy and whatever it might be. But what I'm trying to do is get to a place where the external circumstances and the outcomes don't affect my well-being as much.
And I think a factor for me in being at this point is the fact that we've experienced the success we have. I feel like in my brain and in my heart, it's given me the space to then explore things that I didn't give myself permission to do. And I'm not proud of that. I think that's a lesson learned that, you know, I don't like turning this into something prescriptive. I just like sharing our own experience. So I'll keep this on myself and say to my past self, you know, in terms of more self-discovery and, you know, allowing myself that time for myself, even though I was chasing after things. And the reason why the 20s were such a perilous time was because we were scrappily trying to make things happen. And it was, I feel like there's an art to living your best life now in the midst of those things, right? We just happened to be at a point where, you know, I mean, everything's not going great. I mean, it's not, but there's an art to that. Whatever life throws at you, there's still space for there to be some bestness, and you deserve to have some bestness, you know?
Yeah.
So I'll leave it at that, but I think it's, so I'm gonna say not the 20s, the 40s.
The 40s and beyond are the best years of our lives. And
those
with that,
were the best years of our lives.
I'm gonna leave you with a wreck.
Wreck, baby, one, two, three, four. Wreck, baby, it's, baby, one,
it's
two.
It's a book that's made a big difference in my life.
A book.
Joel Osteen's Live Your Best Life Now.
what a coincidence.
What is the name? Yeah, I had planned on recommending this. No, I can't say that I would recommend that book. I don't know, Joel. Haven't read the book. Good for you if you read it and you got something out of it. But what I actually was planning on recommending something else, but I will do, I'm gonna recommend something I've recommended before, but I'm gonna say it again, therapy.
Did you just change your answer?
Yeah.
I
actually had something else, but I can save it because it was completely unrelated and I can use it for another time. I've talked about it before, but I know that I thought that there was a stigma attached to therapy because I thought that you had to have an acute mental issue in order to go to therapy. But to me, if you want to use the analogy of a car, I think that the idea of like, I don't take my car in, man, until I got a problem. You know what I'm saying, man? But I think if you want your car to continue to run, clean, you want it to be trouble-free, you take it in for the scheduled maintenance, man. And the scheduled maintenance of
your- You can watch my daughter on The View or whatever she's on.
And the scheduled maintenance of your body, there's an interesting dichotomy that somehow in our culture we have this huge mind-body split. And we're like, yeah, I got a problem with my knee. That's something I can talk to my boys about. I know that I'm characterizing everyone who's ignorant as with a Southern accent, and I'm just doing it because that's where I'm from.
Well, I just think that was George Bush
specifically. And those are the kinds of accents that I do. But trust me, I'm a redneck at heart, so I've got nothing against that. But the idea that you can talk freely about your physical problems, but when you get to talking about mental problems, that suddenly this isn't something you can share with a friend, this is something that you're gonna be judged for, that's an unfortunate side effect of something that's gone wrong with this particular society.
And you say mental, you mean, I mean emotional.
Mental and emotional.
All types of.
And I think that I wish I had discovered it earlier, and I highly recommend it. And you know, I know that for a lot of people, cost is an issue, and I don't know what the solution is for that. I know at one point we recommended BetterHelp, but then you couldn't recommend BetterHelp because there was some controversy around the people that I don't know even know what the deal was, but they're not a sponsor anymore. But I don't know what the alternatives are for sort of low cost, you know, mental health help. But I'll just say that
I think they have clarified their the qualifications of the people, and that cleared some things up. And they also refined what types of issues that they're tackling.
Okay, so do your own research on that.
I'm not going to say that it is an illegitimate resource. Okay. I would encourage people to check that out on their own. And
yeah, so I'm just saying that do your own research to find out where affordable, you can get some affordable therapy. But I would just say that I believe that it's a priority, and there's probably some things that you're spending money on that may not be as important. And so, you know, do what you can to find that help.
All right.
It's important.
It wasn't a book, it wasn't an album, but that was pretty good.
Right? Yeah, pretty good.
All right, hashtag Ear Biscuits, keep talking at us. And we always enjoy hearing your feedback. And also, we enjoy hearing if you introduce other people to these conversations. Hey, you should check out Ear Biscuits. These guys are filling the blank with whatever you think will resonate with them. Make it up if you
lie to them if you need to.
Just fabricate
all marketing,
the entire thing.
All marketing is lying. So like, just lean into it.
Yeah, yeah. We need it.
If you think your friend would be more into two women, just say it's two women and they're really funny.
Whatever.
It'll take a few episodes for them to figure it out, but hopefully they'll be hooked by then.